Welcome, and thank you for joining the National Multiple Sclerosis Society's MS Learn Online Internet Program. I'm Rick Turner, your host and medical correspondent. To hear the words that you or a loved one has multiple sclerosis can conjure up different reactions and emotions. For many, it's devastating. For a few, it is a relief that it isn't something even more serious.
When I was diagnosed, it was 1982, and I had just started a business with a partner 6 months prior to diagnosis, so there was some worry about being able to provide for my family and grow the business.
When I was diagnosed, I didn't know what my future would hold.
When I was diagnosed, I felt that life as I knew it was coming to an end.
Well, no matter the reaction, a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis is the beginning of adjusting to life with a chronic illness.
Today, my MS is still an unknown, but I know I'll manage whatever it throws my way with the love and support of my husband, my family, and my friends.
I thought that MS was a figurative death sentence, but now I know it's an inconvenient yet manageable condition that does not have to rule my life.
Today, we will not be discussing the medical aspects of MS. Instead, we'd like to introduce to you three guests who have multiple sclerosis and have made some necessary adjustments to not let MS manage their lives, but rather for them to manage their MS. Joining us first today from Virginia is Sarah. Thank you for being with us today, Sarah.
Thank you, Rick. I'm happy to be here.
Why don't you get us started, Sarah, by telling us about your diagnosis and some of the emotions that you dealt with at that time. When did that happen?
I was first diagnosed in 2000, and this was after about 6 months of unexplained symptoms, including weakness and fatigue, that progressed to numbness in my legs and losing the vision in my right eye. I was told that it was everything from heart failure to depression and neuroses before MRIs, angiograms, and blood tests confirmed that it was MS. At the time, when I got the diagnosis, there was a sense of relief that I wasn't crazy and that I wasn't dying. But I did deal with some depression, anger, isolation, and most importantly, fear with moving on with my life, not being able to plan ahead. I was very single, living alone in the city, and I just had no idea what was going to be happening to me and how I was going to be able to take care of myself.
Right. Well, let's hear from another guest now. From New Jersey, we have Mike joining us. Mike, welcome to MS Learn Online.
Thanks, Rick. I'm glad to be here.
Glad you're joining us today. Tell us about your diagnosis with MS. I understand it was quite a while ago.
Yes, I was diagnosed in January of 1982. My original symptoms came about over the Christmas holidays of 1981. Slowly, the right side of my body became paralyzed. It began with the leg, went up the leg and through the arm. And no, it wasn't too many Christmas spirits. And I saw a neurologist who put me in the hospital and then had a spinal tap and was diagnosed.
Also joining us today is Teresa from Washington State. Thanks for being here in the studio with us, Teresa.
My pleasure, Rick.
And how about you? What were some of the emotions you were dealing with at the time of your diagnosis? And to whom did you turn for support and information?
Well, Rick, I felt fear and anxiety about the future, grief for the life I felt I was losing, guilt for the potential becoming a financial and physical burden, love, fortunately, for the support of my boyfriend and family, and then through my faith, I also found peace. I also felt lucky because I already knew about the National MS Society. I went to their website immediately as soon as it was even an indication that this was a symptom. I ordered their Knowledge is Power series. I also stopped at the Greater Washington chapter and picked up brochures. I read everything and anything I could find there and at the library. I wanted to know all about what I was going to be living with.
So did this diagnosis happen fairly recently?
It's been 6 years now.
Mike, I want to go back to you. You mentioned you were really curious at the time of that diagnosis to find out more about multiple sclerosis. Where did you turn? This was pre-internet, we have to remember. Where did you turn for information and support at that time?
I first turned to the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. My neurologist recommended them to me. He said they would be able to tell me more about it, you know, probably than he could, as far as what was available and what treatments.
Now, you mentioned there were lots of feelings of anger and this sort of thing at the time of your diagnosis. We sort of take for granted today the support network for people who are newly diagnosed. Did anything like that exist back then in 1982?
Actually, yes, they did. There was a support group local to the Trenton area, and I'm still involved with that group as we speak, and it was a very good place to meet people with MS, kind of depressing sometimes because I saw people that were much more disabled than I was, which was, you know, a possible future for me. But it was also very uplifting because you got to see people dealing with it and realize that their lives did not end with the diagnosis of MS.
Right, absolutely. Sarah, this is a very technological age in which we're living, but of course we all know you can't trust everything you find on the internet. So where do you turn for reliable information that you can trust?
Well, I'm fairly lucky. I have a medical health background, so I'm pretty good at interpreting things that I find on the internet or in print. But I highly recommend trustworthy sites like the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, where all their information has been thoroughly vetted by a highly recommended and respected professionals, and then sites like the National Institutes of Health that has excellent information about research and the disease in general. I think those are the two of the best sites I would recommend for information. There are other places such as WebMD and some online support groups just for networking and talking with other people and forming a community.
Now, Teresa, how about some of the other resources, other than what Sarah just mentioned, that you find helpful and valuable in trying to find out more about MS?
Well, Rick, I like the disease-modifying therapy sites for general information about MS.
These are the websites of the drug manufacturers.
Right.
Okay.
There is also the Demos Medical Publishing website where you can find information on books on MS or related topics. So it's a great way to check them out before going to the library to get them or getting them from them. And then I always go to my neurologist.
There's a good answer for you. Go to the source. Sarah, I'm going to go back to you for just a second. You say you're pretty savvy medically, and I'm wondering what tips you can give people who are looking for reliable information on the internet to know when they've come across some information that maybe isn't quite as reliable. What should people look out for?
First off, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. So when you're seeing all of these cures or fantastic, you know, diets or take this pill or theories of what's causing your MS, those are usually a good sign that they're not all that reliable. You want to look at who is providing the information. What are their credentials? Is there an MD or a PhD behind it? Is there an academic qualification? Is it a link to a university or a respected site? And if you have any questions, bring it to your neurologist, call your local chapter of the MS Society, and just, you know, print it out and just take it with a grain of salt. And especially for people who are newly diagnosed, I would say limit your internet time if you can, because it's really easy to scare yourself and get your head filled with all sorts of information that is not always reliable.
Mike, you've been dealing with MS for over 20 years. How often have you come across bogus sites or bogus publications that advertise a cure for MS?
I'm not so sure I've seen the sites, because while I work in the technology arena, I know that there's an awful lot of misinformation on the internet, and I feel much more comfortable with paper in hand, if you will, that I can sit down and read and digest at my leisure. I've seen over the years a number of different theories, bee venom and things like that, that just, didn't hold water, and those kinds of things were around, internet or not.
Yeah, Teresa, you're nodding your head at the bee venom. So you've seen these same sorts of things.
Well-meaning friends are always mailing me articles on the latest cure that they've read about in the paper, and they're usually pretty scary.
And it's always good to take that information and go back to a reliable source, be it the National Multiple Sclerosis Society or your neurologist.
Exactly.
Yes. Let's shift gears for just a second. Talk a little bit about identity, because often these days we hear a lot about identity theft with regards to financial matters. But I want to twist it just a little bit and talk about your thoughts regarding identity theft in terms of multiple sclerosis and its potential of stealing a person's identity and sort of becoming your identity and replacing what was there. And Sarah, I want to get your reaction to that notion.
Sure. Losing my identity was a big part of adjusting to my diagnosis of MS. I was kind of leading a fast-paced, working a couple of different jobs when I was diagnosed, and I really had to stop, slow down, and reprioritize my life. I was teaching at the time, part-time, and I found I couldn't teach anymore because of my cognitive problems. And some creative things that I used to do. I used to play in a band, and I had trouble doing stage work on stage because I couldn't concentrate and lead a band and all of that, and kind of left me with a void. Like, what am I going to do with my life? And who am I now? What am I going to become? And I just had to let go of things for a little while and just let life come to me. And I didn't want to be a person with MS. I did not want that to shape what my life was going to be. And I found when I relaxed and just let life happen, I reinvented myself. I don't perform anymore, but I still enjoy my music. I play music with my husband and, you know, with my children. And I think we all reinvent ourselves periodically through our lives, whether or not we have MS. And yes, you can be sad about some of the things you've lost, but there's so much more that you can allow into your life, and you can become a stronger person, a more motivated person. And there's just different ways to focus your energy. While MS is still part of my identity, it's not my whole identity.
Okay. And Teresa, what are your thoughts on this topic?
You also can't just be your MS. Some people, when they're newly diagnosed, that's all they can see. Can't see the forest for the trees. You can't be that either. You have to remember that you're still the unique person that you were. You're only just, as my nurse practitioner says, more special.
Does it get easier with time?
It does. I didn't think it would, but it actually does.
Yeah. What are your thoughts, Mike? You've been dealing with this for a long time. Do you still think of yourself as a person with MS, or how do you think of yourself?
You know, I never gave my identity to MS. When I was diagnosed, I just realized, all right, this is something I have to deal with, and I will deal with it as best I can, and I will manage it as best I can, and I think I've been fairly successful at that.
Not long ago, we did a two-part series on positive relationships, and I encourage our listeners to visit those webcasts, which can be found on the MS Learn Online menu. But now let's hear from each of you regarding the impact of MS and your relationships. What impact did it have? Let's continue with you, Teresa. How did your diagnosis affect your marital relationship and your friendships?
Well, some friends left.
Really?
Yes. They weren't able to handle the disease or just me having an illness that they couldn't cope with. Others that I've met through and at the National MS Society are some of the closest friends I have ever had. But my best friend when I was diagnosed was my boyfriend, Pat, who told me that we have MS. And he proved that to me when he said, "and in sickness and in health," on our wedding day.
That's very sweet. Mike, you mentioned that you were diagnosed and you and a colleague were starting a new business at that time back in the early 80s. Did MS impact that working relationship at all?
It didn't really. I was able to adjust my lifestyle, stop burning the candles at both ends, if you will. But we were good friends before we founded the business, and we had a good working relationship throughout. So it was, we were there to help each other. We knew that neither one of us could succeed, or the business couldn't succeed with just one of us, and it did take two as a partnership to make it go. And we were willing to make whatever adjustments we had to make to do that.
Sarah, how has MS affected the relationship that you have with your children and your spouse?
Well, my spouse has actually never known me without MS. I met him a year after I was diagnosed, and he took my revelation that I've got the disease in stride. And he's been wonderfully supportive with every decision I've made, whether it's been to cut back at work or stop working when we had kids. As far as my relationship with my children, they're still too young to really understand. My oldest is 2, and my youngest is turning 1 next week. But my 2-year-old does know that, you know, mommy takes shots every day, and sometimes I have to go to the doctor a lot. I was in last week for a steroid treatment, so she knew that mommy had to go to the doctor every day for a few days. But I have my own worries right now that, you know, am I going to have enough energy for them? I worry, especially during the summer months when it's really hard for me to be outside with them, am I going to have the energy and the strength and the physicality to be with them? But then I talk to other mothers who don't have MS, and they're just as tired and just worn out, and they have the same worries. And I think that's one thing to remember is when we have these issues that are going in our head, you have to step back and say, well, what are other people without MS going through, especially with parenting? It's really easy to obsess about what you're not giving your children because you have MS. But when you talk to other parents, they've got the same worries in just slightly different forms.
Right. Well said. Teresa, what about your philosophy on disclosing your diagnosis?
Well, I've always been open about my MS. I want to spread the word about it. I want everybody to know about it. I'll talk to anybody, everybody, for as long as they want or as little as they want. You know, if they keep asking me, I'll keep telling them about it.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mike, you said you haven't had very dramatic symptoms. At least that was my understanding of what you said. Has that always been the case? And if sometimes there were more symptoms, was disclosing an issue for you?
Disclosing has never really been an issue. I got out of the business in 1992, so I had a 10-year track record of living with the disease. So when I took a job at Rutgers University, I did not disclose because it wasn't material to my condition and I wasn't asking for any accommodations. 5 years later, I took a job as a vice president of information services, and prior to being hired, I did disclose only because, you know, they, as the last question they asked before making me an offer, are there any potential deal breakers that you see? And I said, well, I have MS. It's not affected my life at all. I was diagnosed 15 years ago, but you should know this before you make me an offer. And they did make the offer.
Well, good. That was win-win.
Yes,
then.
It was.
They got a good employee and they got a little education at the same
Absolutely.
Time. I want to stay with you, Mike, and talk a little bit about the importance of having a good doctor-patient relationship. What's been your experience over the years, and how has it impacted how you've managed your MS?
Well, shortly after I was diagnosed, somebody gave me the book Anatomy of an Illness by the late Norman Cousins, and I found this book very helpful. The book had a premise of humor and also building a partnership with your physician. And having been in the service industry, I became a very demanding consumer. If I was paying somebody for their services, I wanted to make sure I was getting my money's worth. And this book just reinforced how to go about that and how to build a relationship with your doctor as a partner in managing your own health. You know, the doctor sees lots and lots of patients, but when I'm with him, I want him to be my partner for my health. And it just seems to work very well. I've given up on some doctors that weren't as attentive to my needs or willing to partner with me. They were rather dictatorial. And I found much better to work with doctors that I understand and I respect their knowledge, but they're also willing to respect me as a partner in dealing with my symptoms and my disease.
Was that a difficult thing to do, to switch doctors because you weren't getting along with one or you didn't like their style?
Not really. And again, that's just because of my business background. You know, in a business, you're trying to satisfy your customers, and I'm the doctor's customers. I expect satisfaction. So, you know, if I didn't feel I was getting my money's worth, it was not hard to go someplace else.
Good for you. Sarah, what are your thoughts on this issue?
It's really important that you're your own advocate. Only you know how you are feeling on a given day and what you need and how MS is impacting your life. My symptoms are different than somebody else's symptoms, and what I can tolerate are different from what somebody else tolerates. And you need a healthcare team that's going to listen to you. They might look at you and say, you look great, your tests are normal, but they don't know how you're functioning on a day-to-day basis. So if they don't listen, you switch. I, too, have had to switch. For different reasons, my neurologist, who is wonderful, went on sabbatical and has been for a couple of years. So I've been going around to a few different neurologists waiting for her to return, which is hopefully very soon. But it's, you know, I'm a pushy person when it comes to my health. So I always feel like I like to be in control, but in a teamwork sense. And so if you're having trouble with a neurologist, definitely see a different one or work with many neurologists have nurse managers or case managers that can help you negotiate the system or really be an advocate with you if you feel like you're not being heard. But again, it's up to you to take responsibility for how you feel.
Right. Great advice. Well, as we come near the end of our program, I'd like for each of our guests to leave our listeners, particularly those who have been recently diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, with a message of hope. And speaking from your own experience, Mike, what would you like to tell those who are newly diagnosed?
Well, over the years I've been diagnosed, I've met many MS people who still maintain an active lifestyle. I've been very fortunate in that I've been able to lead a pretty full life on my own. I'm still an avid Harley-Davidson rider, and all I can say is do as much as you possibly can. I did, you know, have to slow down a little bit from my younger years, but learn to manage the disease and how it affects you. Pick a good care partner, doctor, to help you through this journey.
And Sarah?
I'd like to say that there's life with MS. Some of the best things in my life have happened since I was diagnosed. I met and married my husband, the birth of my two children, and I think a lot of these things I let into my life because I made room for them after my diagnosis. And it's hard to say that they would have happened had I not had my diagnosis, and I wouldn't trade them for the world. And I feel like I'm living an active, vital, important life right now, and hope to continue that.
So not only is there life after the diagnosis, it sounds like it's been the best of life so far for you.
It has. This has probably been the best part of my life to date. I've never been happier or more fulfilled, which is a little surprising. But yeah, I feel very hopeful and just full of life.
And Teresa, your thoughts?
Know that there will come a time when MS doesn't consume your every waking moment. That really takes a bit of time to accomplish that, but it really does happen. And also know that there will be a world free of MS.
Well, to Mike and Sarah and Teresa, thank you all for sharing your valuable thoughts and insights with us. We do appreciate it very much. Thanks again.
Rick, you're welcome. It's been my pleasure.
It's been wonderful. Thank you.
It's been fun, Rick. Thanks.
The National MS Society is proud to be a source of information for you about multiple sclerosis. Our comments are based on professional advice, published experience, and expert opinion, but do not represent individual therapeutic recommendation or prescription. For specific information and advice, consult a qualified physician. If you have a question that was not addressed, please email us at mslearnonline@nmss.org. If you'd like more information on multiple sclerosis, click on the resources link on your screen or call the chapter nearest you for an answer to your question. You can reach your chapter by calling 1-800-FIGHT-MS. That's 1-800-344-4867. You may also want to check the National MS Society's website, where you'll find more information about today's topic and a menu of other webcasts available to participate in. Funding for this program was provided as an unrestricted educational grant from these National MS Society chapters. For the National MS Society, I'm Rick Turner, wishing you health and happiness.